Omnam, however, Lekishiske Adam Latova Zos, for man to merit this good, Roi, it is befitting, Shiyamal Rishona, that he should labor first, Yishtadl Biyagiyo, and he should attempt in his effort Leknosa to acquire it. Vahainu, this means to say, Shishtadl Davik Boyzbarach, that he should attempt to cling to Hashem, Bekoach Masim, with the strength of the actions, Shetoldosam Zeinyan, whose result are this inyan, this matter, Vehem Heim HaMitzvahs, what are these? The mitzvahs. Avram Avinu lifts up his eyes and he sees three wayfarers, three gentlemen waiting off on the horizon. He runs out to greet them. He bows down full face in the sand. Al na tavor me'el Adoni, please do not pass from your master. He ushers them into his tent. He stands over them, and the psukim are very clear and very elaborate in terms of what he serves them. He serves them basar v'cholov, meat and milk. And the Das HaKeinim brings down a medrash that explains that 400 years later, this conversation is repeated. When Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to Shemayim to receive the Torah, the Malachi Asharis tried to stop him. As a matter of fact, Malachi Asharis tried to kill Moshe. How dare a Adam, how dare a basar v'dam come up to Shemayim to take the Torah? The reason why was because the Torah is the spiritual nourishment, the spiritual fuel of the world. If man learns the Torah very well and good, but if he stops learning, the entire world is in jeopardy. The Malachim didn't want man to have it. And at that point, Hashem said to Moshe Rabbeinu, give them an answer. Explain to the Malachim why they have to allow man to have the Torah. Says Moshe Rabbeinu to these Malachim, didn't three of you eat basar v'chalav? Didn't Avram Avinu serve meat and milk together to three of you back then? Miyad Hodu, the Medrash says, immediately the Malachim agreed, you're right, and they acquiesced and allowed Moshe to receive the Torah. That's the Medrash. This Medrash is very difficult to understand. Why? Because, number one, it's only three Malachim. I'm not sure what the sin of a Malach eating meat and milk together is, but three Malachim ate basar v'chalav. Therefore what? But more than that, this event happened 400 years earlier. And even more than that is the fact that if eating meat and milk together is a reason why a certain body of people should not be allowed to receive the Torah, I dare say that more than three Jews have eaten basar v'chalav, meat and milk together, in the thousands of years that we've received the Torah. So the question is, why was this such a telling argument? Why is it that the minute Moshe Rabbeinu said, look, didn't three of you eat meat and milk together? Didn't you violate the Torah? The minute they heard those words, miyad hodu, immediately they agreed. The question is, why was this such a winning argument? Why was this so potent? And I believe when we focus on this question, and specifically the answer to it, we'll get a better understanding of the human and what it is that Hashem actually wants from us. The Chovos Levavos explains to us that the very nature of the human being is an utter contradiction. Do you ever notice we human beings are a bit fickle? One day I can be kind and generous, and the very next moment I can be nasty and creepy. One minute I can be the most kindly, sensitive person on the planet, and the next moment I can be cruel. But here's the strange part about it. It's not some strange Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde, and not some sociopath. It's me. Regular people, we act so differently, we act in such divergent manners, that one of the questions that a human being has to ask himself is, what's pshat? How is it that one moment I'm davening to Hashem right there, speaking to Hashem, the creator of the heavens and the earth, and a split second later I'm gone 50 billion miles away? One moment I feel the holiness of Shabbos, it's the most beautiful occasion, and the next minute it's gone. How do I understand myself? And the Chovos Levavos and Shaar Avodos Elokim explains to us the reason for these strange phenomena in the human. He explains that when Hashem made the human being, Hashem took two diverse elements and put them together. Within me, within the eye that I'm speaking, within the eye that thinks, there are two total contradictory elements. There's a nefesh ha-bahami and nefesh ha-sichli. Nefesh ha-bahami refers to the animal soul in man, the instincts, the drives, the passions. Nefesh ha-sichli refers to what we call the seichel, the upper elements of man, his holy neshama. Each of them have their sway, each of them have their influence. But the only way we can understand ourselves is if we understand both components. So let's break them apart and see if we could better understand each part of the human. part of the human is a nefesh habahami. Nefesh habahami means an animal instinct, a part of the human that's alive with all of the drives, instincts, and desire to keep that person alive. If you'd like to understand that part of me, the animal soul of me, all you have to do is go into the wild kingdom, find its parallel, and then study it. Now, every living animal has a nefesh. A dog has a nefesh. A cow has a nefesh. It doesn't have seichel. It doesn't reason. It doesn't have intellect. But it has all of the drives, instincts, and desire to keep itself alive and to keep the rest of its species alive. You'd almost call it a personality. I remember there was a fellow in the high school who grew up with a puppy. His father bought him a puppy when he was a little boy, and the boy and the puppy kind of grew up together. When this fellow left home to go to yeshiva, it was very rough on the dog. The dog, now grown, missed its master. And this fellow, when he would go home for an out Shabbos, found he had a little bit of a problem. What was his problem? Every time he'd come home, his dog, who missed its master so much, would run over to its master, and in its excitement, it would wet its master's pants leg. Now here's the point. The dog has affinities. The dog has proclivities, a nature, a desire. You'd almost call it a personality. It's not quite a person. It doesn't quite have das, intelligence, understanding, but all of the drives, all of the instincts that are needed for its survival are programmed into its nefesh. The robin instinctively hunts the worm. Bullfrogs instinctively mate. The robin doesn't sit by and say, based on the general availability as well as the nutritional value, I believe the worm is the best source of nutrients for me. It hungers for the worm. The chatul, the cat, hungers for the mouse. It's unaware of availability. It doesn't think of the various things involved, but instinctively, naturally hungers for the mouse. All of the desires to keep that animal alive, Hashem put into the animal's soul, into the nefesh ha'adam, and that's what keeps that nefesh of the behemoth, alive. Now, sometimes you could see very sophisticated behaviors. Sometimes you could see things that almost look like intelligence, but are not quite. Let me give you, for instance, National Geographic had an article about Siberian tigers that were orphaned at birth. There were these two biologists who discovered a few cubs. These were Siberian tigers that were, their mother had been killed and they were left basically abandoned. They were going to die. So the biologists took them into their lab and they brought them up on bottled milk, and they were successful in saving the lives of these cubs. But the problem that the biologists faced was that as these cubs grew, it became apparent that there was no one around who could then help them learn to survive in the wild. It came to a certain point where the biologists had no choice but to release them, and they studied these cubs, now grown tigers. And this is what they saw. From the moment these cubs were released into the wild, instinctively, they hunted the deer. They knew how to stalk, they knew how to wait, they knew how to pounce, they knew how to kill the animal, and they knew which part to eat first. There was no mother to train them, no mother to teach them. Instinctively, in their nefesh, in their animal soul, are all of the desires, instincts pre-programmed to keep them alive and to keep them existing on the planet. That part of the nefesh is instinctual. It has no wisdom, but it's programmed with all of the desires to keep itself alive, as well as the species as a whole. Emperor penguins are a fantastic example of that. The male emperor penguin will sit on the Arctic floor and wait. What will happen is the mother penguin lays a large egg. It will swaddle over to the male and deposit that egg onto the male's feet, and the male has a little patch of fur that it covers that egg with. If that egg touches the South Arctic ice, it cracks and will not survive. The father stands there day after day while the mother then goes to a feeding hole to find a crack in the ice, and it will try, the mother will try to build up its milk supply. Weeks, months, the father will stand there shivering in the cold, literally consuming 25% of its body fat, effectively almost starving itself to death. It'll sit there week after week, month after month, incubating this egg until the mother comes back and is ready to feed the new hatched baby. The Siberian tiger doesn't think. The emperor penguin doesn't delve into things. It has all of the instincts, all of the natural desires to accomplish that which it's supposed to do, to keep itself alive and to keep the species alive as well. That is the Nefesh HaBahami, the animal soul in the animal kingdom. Parallel to that, Hashem placed into man a Nefesh HaBahami. Within me are all of the instincts, desires, and nature to keep myself alive and to procreate, to bring around the next generation. I don't have to think about it. I don't have to dwell upon it. It's just instinctual. It's natural. All of the drives are there within me. Those drives are not controllable. Those drives have no wisdom to them. Those drives flare when they flare, wish when they wish, want what they want, what they want. But within me, there's a whole other dimension. Hashem put a Nefesh HaBahami and mixed it with a Nefesh HaSichli, an intelligent, brilliant neshama. Hashem took from under the Kisei HaKavod the most brilliant facet of creation. Hashem took man, a neshama that is insightful, that sees from one end of the earth to the other, a neshama that understands the future, a neshama that's brilliant. And Hashem mixed these two together. You see, within me is a nefesh asichli, within me is a neshama that only desires to do that which is good and proper. There's a neshama within me that wants to be dovik to Hashem, that wants to cling to Hashem. There's a neshama within me that wants to be just like Hashem. Just like Hashem is giving, magnanimous, and generous, so too within me there is a part that truly wants to help others, that feels others' pains, that really wants to give. But the I whom speaking to you am comprised of both. A nefesh HaBahami and a nefesh HaSichli, both mixed in together. So the I really have competing parts. There's a part of me that just doesn't care about anything but me. There's a part of me that deeply cares about other people. There's a part of me that hungers for something and wants it now and will accept nothing but its urges answered now. And there's a part of me that says, what are you kidding me? What do you need that for? It's silly. You don't need that. It's not going to help you. It's not going to make you better. But the I whom speaking to are in utter contradiction. Now, if you'd like to see this manifest, all you have to do is study the human. If you really pay attention to the way we human beings act, think, the way we carry on, you'll see these two sides constantly in conflict, constantly calling out for their desires to be met. Part of me only wants to serve Hashem, part of me couldn't care less. Part of me only wants to do what's wise and proper, part of me is whatever, the moment, the desire, as it hits me. Now, I had a chance to see this in an interesting way. One of the wisest women I know is my wife. And interestingly enough, I got a chance to see this function in her. I'll explain to you what I mean. There is a diet called the SIT diet. It's an acronym. It's self-inflicted torture. The self-inflicted torture diet basically consists of the following. You take a large wedge of chocolate cake. You put that in this hand. You take a Diet Coke in this hand. You say the words, I'm so fat, I'm so fat, I'm so fat. You consume the entire wedge of chocolate cake and drink the Diet Coke. Now, many women go on the SIT diet. Many women live on the SIT diet. After my wife had our first child, I found, lo and behold, to my surprise, that my wife went on the SIT diet. And she was doing exactly this. And at a certain point, I said to her, listen, if you want to be heavy, I'm okay with that. If you want to be slim, I'm okay with that. But this self-inflicted torture stuff, it just makes no sense. Anyway, as things progressed, it was clear that I wasn't getting anywhere. So I said to my wife, that's it. We're going to Weight Watchers. It was a number of years ago. Back then, there were very few men who attended Weight Watchers meetings. I was a young colo fella and the only male in the room, and I got a chance to see a very interesting experience. Now, let's focus on the fact that all these people are there because they want to lose weight, and all these people are there because this is something very important to them. They've stopped their daily schedule, dedicated a tremendous amount of focus and effort on losing weight. And this is what I got to experience during the first meeting. The leader gets up in the front of the room and says something like, okay, ladies, what happened in your week? So one woman raises her hand and says, well, I was doing great until somebody brought out a bag of Lay's potato chips. Oh, potato chips, another woman goes, oh, yeah, oh, and a murmur goes up in the room. Another woman raises her hand, I was doing great until someone brought out donuts. Oh, donuts, and you could hear the groans. Another woman says, I was doing great until the chocolate cake came. Oh, the chocolate cake. And I was watching these mature, grown women losing it right in front of my eyes. And I asked myself the following question: what's the problem? If you've made a decision that you don't want to eat the chocolate cake, don't eat it. If you've made a decision that you're only going to eat these many calories a day, stick to it. Weight Watchers doesn't ask you to starve. They give you a balanced diet that has enough nutritional needs. You're not going to be hungry. Why can't you just stick to it? Would you like to know the answer to that question? The answer is that when the chocolate cake comes out, there's a part of the woman's voice that says, I have made a rational, intelligent decision not to eat it. But there's another voice inside that says, I'm not going to touch it. Oh, can I just take a bite? I won't go near it. Oh, come on, just a little. No, yes, no, yes, no, yes. And when she eats that chocolate cake, the essence of her is in contradiction. There are two voices, two parts, each one screaming out for its answer. The seichel says, I don't want. The behemoth says, I do, I don't, I do, I don't. Ah! And that is the human, utter contradiction. And it's only when you become wise to yourself that you begin to make sense out of this thing called the human being. These two parts of me are fighting for primacy. One or the other becomes dominant. You see, much like a muscle that with use it becomes stronger, with disuse it weakens. Each part, if you use it, it becomes stronger. If you don't use it, it becomes weaker. The more a person gives in to the Nefesh HaBahami, the more a person gives in to his whims and his desires, his instincts, the stronger they become, the more dominant, the more powerful, the appetite becomes more controlling, and the weaker his Nefesh HaSichli becomes. On the other hand, the more that he exercises his Nefesh HaSichel, the more that he thinks, the more that he resists, the more that he says no and controls his appetites, the stronger the seichel becomes. But both of these are fighting for primacy. Both of them are fighting to be dominant. They're each fighting for control over the human. And now we come to the core critical question. Why in the world did Hashem create the human being in such a strange manner? Why did Hashem make us in utter contradiction? Wouldn't it be a lot easier if we didn't have that behemoth side? I would just know what's right and do it. This is a mitzvah. This is an avera. Go for it. What's the issue? Why create the human in such an utter contradiction? And I believe the answer to that is predicated on understanding more clearly why it is that Hashem created us, what we're here for, and what the actual avoda, what our actual mission on the planet is. And let me begin this part with an interesting question. The question is, does a malach have bechira? Does an angel have bechira? Now, any school-aged child knows the answer to that question. A malach doesn't have bechira. Human beings have free will. An angel doesn't have free will. That's the difference between a malach and an angel. A human being has free will. An angel doesn't, right? Okay, now every school-aged child knows that. The only problem is that that's utterly false. It's not correct at all. There are many places in Chazal where you see malachim are punished. An angel has as much free will as does a human. There's no distinction in the free will of a human being and a malach. The distinction between a human being and a malach is a very different area. You see, a malach sees things with absolute clarity. A malach has a vision that's clear, and therefore a malach sees the consequences. If I do this act, it damages me. If I do this act, it improves me. Because a malach sees with such clarity of thought, it has free will. It could choose to violate Hashem's wishes, but it never would. Why? Because it'd be utterly foolish. It would be akin to the following. If I were to ask you, do you have free will to put your hand in a fire? Now, in theory, you could. Imagine I pull out a $100 bill. I pull out a $100 bill. I say to you, listen, this $100 bill is yours if you put your hand in a fire for 1 minute. Do you have free will? Now, I taught high school for enough years to know that the questions are going to come. Well, Rebbe, what do you mean? How about $50 for 30 seconds, $25 for 10 seconds, right? But I guarantee, if you've ever gone to the burn unit of a hospital, you'll know that you won't put your hand in a fire for a minute, not for $100, not for $1,000, not for $10,000. Why? Because it's utterly stupid. It's self-inflicted damage. It destroys me, and I never would do it. I see the damage, and I'm not even tempted. That's the vision, that's the clarity that an angel has. It sees the results. In theory, could it violate Hashem's will? Oh, it could, but it sees how foolish it is. Every commandment that Hashem gives is for the good of that creation and the good of the creation in totality. A malach would never wish to violate the will of Hashem. Why? Because it's utterly foolish. On rare occasions when you hear about malachim getting punished, it's because sometimes they go a little bit beyond what they're supposed to. Sometimes they feel the honor of Hashem or the dishonor, and they're a little bit too much of a kanoi, a little bit too vengeful, and they overstep their bounds. But it's an intellectual decision. A little bit too much energy in that. But it's not because they were blinded by physicality. They saw clearly, they understood, and the difference between a malach and a human being is not free will, it's the blinders. It's the temptation. You see, there's a part of me that sees just like a malach. There's a part of me that understands that every mitzvah is good for me and every avera damages me. I get it. I understand it. But there's another part of me that doesn't get it at all. There's another part of me that just says, I'm hungry. I want it. I desire it. And I have to have it now. And there's nothing that matters. You see, the behemoth, the nefesh abahami within me, doesn't see consequences. All that it sees is that which is revealed and that which is immediate. Golui umiyad. Only that which is open and obvious and only that which is immediately here. It desires for the here and now. It wishes for what it sees because it doesn't see the consequences. It doesn't realize what this action will lead to. And when those women are tempted by the chocolate cake or the Lay's potato chips or the donuts, it's because there's a part of them that says, I want it. I'm hungry for it, but I don't want it. If I eat that, I'm going to get fat. I don't care. I want it. I have to have it. I need it, but I don't. I do. I don't. I do. The nefesh habahami desires, hungers, and doesn't care. It can't care about anything that's not there, that's not immediate, that's not revealed, because all it is a series of appetites, of hungers, of inclination. It's a nature. The I whom speaking to are in utter contradiction. The I whom speaking to are combined of these two. And if you'd like to fundamentally understand why it is that the Torah gives us various mitzvahs, this will help us understand. You see, the Chovos HaLevavos explains that which we call a chok isn't actually such a great secret. There are many mitzvahs in the Torah that their tamim, their reasons, are not that obvious. The Chovos HaLevavos explains to us what that means. He says, the reason why the Torah forbade us from eating certain foods, meat and milk, non-kosher meat, various things, is because it strengthens the nefesh habahami. There are certain foods that give an inordinate strengthening to the nefesh habahami, and the Torah forbids us to eat them because it strengthens it too much. As an example, if you drink caffeine, and if you drink a lot of coffee, you know it'll tend to get you jittery. It tends to affect me. If I have 3-4 cups in the morning, I get nervous, maybe anxious, maybe more quickly will I get angry. It affects me. So too, the Achronim explained to us, the Torah forbids us from eating predators. None of the kosher animals are predators. Why? Because when you eat the nefesh of the animal, you ingest some of its nature within you, and the nature of a predatory animal is to be dominant, to be aggressive. The Torah forbade us from eating that because the Torah wants to protect us. The Torah doesn't want our nature to become like that, and the foods that you eat affect you. It's called a chok because you have to be a scientist of the soul to understand how it functions, but says the Chovos HaLevavos in Shaar Avodas Elokim, all of the Isuri HaTorah, all of the things that the Torah forbids have a reason. The primary reason is because they strengthen nefesh habahami. The Torah forbids us to wear shatnez. Wool is okay, linen is okay, but when you put them together, they give an extra strengthening to the nefesh habahami. How it does that, you have to be a deep scientist of the soul. You have to study very, very deeply. Shlomo HaMelech, Moshe Rabbeinu may have perceived that understanding. It's called a chok because we don't understand how it functions, but what it does is exactly that. It gives a strengthening to nefesh habahami, and if you eat trei food, it's metamtem halev. Chazal used that expression, that trei food deadens the heart. It's like Novocaine. When you go to the dentist, you get a Novocaine shot, so it's fine and well when he's drilling, but when you walk out of the office and you're drooling because you don't feel your lips, it's dead. It takes an hour or two till I get back the feeling. When you eat trei food, it deadens the heart. It makes it more difficult to feel Shabbos. It makes it more difficult to feel Kedusha. It makes it more difficult to perceive that I'm speaking to Hashem. Many a time I've had conversations with people who are on the way to being frum, and I can tell immediately why it is that their heart is stopped. They can't hear it. It's blocked. There's a blockage. Trei food damages the human in the sense that it strengthens the Nefesh HaBahami. In the mix of I, it gives a greater strengthening to the animal soul, and it makes it more difficult for the Seichel to see, to understand. Every action that I'm engaged in strengthens either the Nefesh HaBahami or the Nefesh HaSichli. The two are constantly fighting for primacy. The two are constantly battling one another. And I believe that that's exactly the answer to the original question we asked. When Moshe Rabbeinu went up to receive the Torah, Hashem said, give an answer to the Malachim why the Torah should be given to man. Says Moshe Rabbeinu to the Malachim, tell me, didn't three of you eat basar b'chalav? How could that be? How could three of you eat meat and milk together? Malachim don't sin. You see things with too greater clarity. How is it possible that three of you ate? You know what the answer is? Because it doesn't damage you. You're not forbidden to eat meat and milk together because you don't have a nefesh habahami. You're pure seichel. To an creation, to a creature that's pure logic, pure holiness, it's not damaged by eating something like that because it doesn't have a nefesh habahami. It's not in conflict. There's no fight. The mitzvahs were given to man. All of the mitzvahs are to a man who's in constant conflict. They're given to allow one part of him to vanquish the other, but it's to a human being who has a nefesh hasichli and a nefesh habahami, miyad hodu. Immediately the Malachim agreed. Why? Because you're right. It makes sense. And this concept is fundamental and essential for understanding the human, for understanding the mitzvahs of the Torah, for understanding what it is that Hashem wants from us. When you begin to study the human and you begin to see how much it is that we're in conflict, that's when it's time to stop and ask yourself, why? And the why behind it is because the I whom speaking to you am comprised of two voices. There's a part of me that's brilliant and good and giving and caring, and there's a part of me that's pure instinct. Go to the wild kingdom, find an animal, and you'll see it has an instinct. It has a nature. A bear has a nature. The cougar has a nature. Each of them has a different, almost personality. All of the instincts Hashem placed in the animal kingdom to keep it alive, so too in man. The difficulty that we have is I have two voices. There's a voice inside me that's rational, that's brilliant, that's insightful. There's a voice inside me that says, wait a minute, am I going to be happy with this course in life that I've chosen? Am I happy with this decision? Am I going to be pleased with this 2 weeks from now, 2 years from now? But there's another voice inside me that just doesn't care, that just doesn't see. There's a voice inside me that sees what it wants, when it wants, and wants it desperately, hungers for it, and will well up. Within me, those two voices speak, each demand its fill, each demand its answer. And the choices that I make in my lifetime strengthen one or the other. Every single activity, every thought, every action is one or the other having its way. When a person gives in indiscriminately to his desires, to his needs, to his instincts, they become stronger and stronger, they become more dominant. Ultimately, he becomes what we call a shtik taiva, just a totally dominated animal. He becomes an animal, walks around like a human, but he's totally commanded, totally driven by his desires, by his passion, and he no longer can control himself. On the other hand, if a human being exerts that willpower, resists, follows the Torah system, the seichel becomes stronger and stronger, more dominant and more dominant. He becomes a malach, literally an angel in the form of man. His seichel rules and he becomes a different sort of human being. But the human being is ever in flux. The Torah gives us various isurim, the Torah gives us various prohibitions, specifically because they strengthen one part or the other. The Torah is the ultimate system of self-perfection. When a person follows it, he grows and accomplishes, ultimately reaches his purpose in existence.